Yesterday, Thursday, January 16th, was a real pleasant and a real full day. It began by me taking the exercises prescribed by Dr. Krause in the morning. Took about 40 minutes. Would have been a far, far better thing if I had started them 10 years ago. But since I can't go back those 10, I just have to take what there is of me and do the best I can from now on. And then I worked on the logistics of the luncheon today, going over the guests who are coming and thinking of my points of contact with each of them, and the same for the dinner tonight. At 1 o'clock, I really had what to me is the most pleasant type of luncheon, not given for any particular person or purpose, but just to have fun. Senate wives whom I enjoy, like Betty Fulbright and Henrietta Anderson and Mary Ellen Monroney and Abigail McCarthy. And then, from a long ways off, Mrs. Philip Hoff, the wife of the governor of Vermont, amazingly enough, a Democrat. And I got to bring her up on the state of my maple tree that was given to me at when we were in Vermont and that I have planted at the ranch, and told her all about where I have my picture of the sugar mill hung in the office at the ranch. And then there was Miss Bob Kentner, Jean Kentner, whom I've known for so long and been so fond of. And Miss Catherine Quinn, who is Miss Democrat of Connecticut, must have been sort of an unusual note for some of the other guests. She, if you ask her just how the vote went in Precinct 14 in Stanford back in 1948, I'll bet she could tell you, and she could tell you how to get it to go a certain way in the next upcoming one. A real savvy woman in her line of business, and not perhaps what a great many of the other guests were quite used to. And then, what an utter joy it was for me to meet and have at my own table Helen Hayes, who's playing here in Miss Dove. I've watched her from the other side of the footlights for so many years and just loved her and found her enchanting in person. After we got to our coffee, Ellen Stoltenberg got up and told us about her life and times with the UN. She's the one who brought down the 28 delegates to the LBJ Ranch last April. And I thought just a little information about what some private people are doing to show those UN delegates confined in that vast steel and stone thing, which is New York, to show them what something else of the United States looks like would be a good idea. And she's taken them to places like Wyoming, California, Nebraska, and also, I'm glad to say, to Texas. They all seem to enjoy it. It was over rather quickly. And then I spent the afternoon getting back to signing my bushels of mail and waiting for Lucy to come in so I could give her the good, good news of the talk that I had had with Miss Catherine Lee of NCS, who told me that, yes, she thought she could rearrange one of Lucy's finals so that she could have it on Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon so that she could get away one day early and have her trip to Wisconsin, a trip that I fear will not meet with approval of all the members of our family, but which I, well, maybe I'm a softy, but I very much want her to have. And she presented me with a problem which would make a good play. She's in a position where she could save lives or ruin lives, and I don't quite have the judgment or the courage to tell her which is which. And one of the best pieces of news that Miss Lee told me is that the teachers say that Lucy's attitude is getting so much better. She doesn't panic anymore. She's organizing her time better, and that they really think if the doctor agrees that she might go back after finals are over next week to taking that course that was knocked out when she began to have this eye trouble, so that she won't have to be tied all summer long to work. That would be a great joy, because I'd love for her to go back to Camp Mystic, although therein lies some of the problem that she was telling me about. We had an early dinner this evening, 7 o'clock, business suit, about 64 guests, for the heads of the Senate committees and their ranking members, and the leadership on both sides. The purpose, as is so often with Lyndon, was really purely business. He invited in McCone of Intelligence, McNamara, Secretary of Defense, Russ, the Secretary of State, and Kermit Gordon of the budget, spelled in capital letters, to brief them. As soon as we'd all filed into the blue room and shaken hands and had a drink, Lyndon got up and announced that he'd like the gentleman to accompany him to the little theater where there would be a briefing. And I said, I wish all the ladies would go upstairs, and perhaps some of them might like to see the second floor of the family living quarters. So we trooped up, and of course, Senator Margaret Chase Smith went with the gentleman. And speaking of Senator Smith, she said something really quite dear, she and Senator Aiken together. Senator Aiken said to Lennon, "Boy, if you keep on acting this way, some of these days you're going to be President of the United States." And Senator Smith said, "Well, if he keeps on behaving as he is, he will be president again." Kermit Gordon remarked while we were having our drinks that I've seen more of your husband in the last 3 weeks than you have. And I said that both his wife and I had a complaint in her, but just so it all wound up in saving a few million dollars, I think we can be content. The ladies, I guess about 26 or 7 of us, trooped upstairs, most of us up the steps and some in the elevator, because Luella Dirksen had a broken ankle and Henrietta Hill had one that was healing, and several more, the elevator was better for them. And then we began in the yellow room, and I pointed out all the things that I know and love and gave a sort of a conducted tour, interrupted by everybody telling how they remember this or that. But the surprising thing, the most surprising thing of all, was how many said they had never been on the second floor before, and they are the wives of ranking members of the Senate. We did practically everything except Lucy's room, where she was studying for finals, and Lindbergh's room, because we got the call that dinner was ready before we had finished it. And Mrs. Goldwater was particularly interested in the Catlins, because after all, they're from her part of the world. Some of the old-timers confirmed my belief that the beautiful still life of flowers that's in the Queen's room above the fireplace was the gift of Princess Elizabeth, the present Queen Elizabeth of England, when she was our guest here, oh, good many years ago, and that it used to hang in the state dining room above the buffet to the right as you entered. I believe, as always, the Lincoln room attracted the most interest, and I was glad that I had gone through that room enough to say that 5 pieces of the furniture, the Victorian settee and 2 of the little slipper chairs, were original pieces that had belonged to the Lincoln family. I did point out that that was not the room that he actually slept in, that it was our own bedroom where he slept, and several of the people later on looked at the plaque above the fireplace in our bedroom that points that out, and also the little one below that says, "And this was the room where President John Fitzgerald Kennedy slept with his wife Jacqueline during his 2 years, 10 months, and however many days was it of his life in the White House." All the time, as much as I enjoyed the ladies, I kept on wishing I could have been eavesdropping with the men, because that was the whole thing was for, to acquaint them with what the administration is trying to do, not to push or convert or sell, but to lay it out and say that we think this is best, and please try to understand, and if you can't go along, you can't, but, well, I hope there's some residue of goodwill and a good deal more knowledge, because that's what we invested the evening in. When we went into dinner, we went round tables in the state dining room, and I found myself delightfully enough between Senator Dick Russell, who was on my left, and Senator Carl Hayden, who was on my right. Carl Hayden used a sentence that I've heard all my life vaguely and never heard accurately, and that is the one about Horatius at the bridge. And it went something like this: I take my stand on the right to guard the bridge. I'm glad to have him there. It was interesting to see everybody's reaction to the things as I took the ladies around upstairs. Of course, Mrs. Paul Douglas's most delightful reaction was to the bust of Houdon, because her own father is a sculptor. And of course, all of us had a lot to talk about with the Senate Lady's Red Cross, which I am going to miss more than nearly anything, because that was therapy and solace and quiet and companionship and just plain fun, as well as a slight sense of doing something good. After dinner, they went home at a very early hour, about 9:45, I would say, but then the party had begun at 7, and just a few of us trooped upstairs for one more drink. The Humphreys, the Fulbrights, I believe the O'Briens, and Lyndon and I. There was nobody upstairs to do it, and so I went in the kitchen and took back my usual job of being the bartender. Then presently they left, and I hoped that would be the end of the evening, which it was for me. Unhappily, it wasn't for Lyndon. There was a large stack on Panama to read, which Secretary Rusk had sort of shaken his head and warned me about the possibility of as he entered at 7 o'clock that evening. So it was another 2 o'clock night for him. One of my last thoughts was being grateful to Bess for concocting a menu that was about as inexpensive as you could work out for a group that was this important. There was just one wine, and there was chicken. I have a feeling chicken's going to frequently be a part of our menus at the White House. Breast of capon, valet d'auge. At any rate, it really was a beautiful dinner.